Well, I know it's kind of hard to switch topics here and talk about low temperature stress considering the weather we have outside, so, but it is coming, at least it is in Massachusetts, so we'll talk a little bit about some of the research. I'm going to highlight some of the research projects that we've been doing in relationship to winter injury of cool season grasses, and mostly I'll be highlighting the research of two former graduate students, Lindsay Hoffman and Shen Guan, and I'll let you know some of the different projects we did for that. But depending on what part of the country you're in, at least this past winter, especially in more northern climates, we had a very significant problem with winter kill, depending on certain grass species. And what you see here is a golf course putting green and also large parts of fairways that's actually not dormancy, that is kill. And most of the composition, or the grass composition there, is annual bluegrass. And so golf courses that have significant amounts of annual bluegrass this past winter suffered tremendously, resulting in huge renovation efforts. And so a lot of efforts into trying to go in and renovate, a lot of money associated with this. We also saw, depending again on the species, so this is, we actually also had 100% kill on anything perennial ryegrass, at least in and around our research facilities, and that's what you see here in these areas, these low-cut areas. So annual bluegrass and perennial ryegrass are primarily the two species that we can see winter kill with. Sometimes, depending on tall fescue and the timing of establishment, we may also see that. For those of you who are in maybe more warmer climates and deal with warm season grasses, you're obviously familiar with a lot of winter kill on Bermuda grass or injury to Bermuda grass that happened this year. So there are many different causes of winter injury. That's just a very general term. I mean, if the grass is dead and it was associated with winter, you know, that's what it is. But in our region, we tended to have, this past year and in most years, we tend to have a lot of issues with direct low temperature kill, crown hydration, and ice. So if you saw a lot of the webcasts coming out, especially out of states like Michigan, with ice injury and anoxia, that was very big. Whereas if you start getting into other areas, kind of more west, northwestern areas where they had significant issues with desiccation. So regardless, though, of which type of stress, we know that based on a lot of the research that's been done, particularly in forage grasses, that cold acclimation period is required to enhance freezing tolerance. That's actually a very major component of winter hardiness in grasses. So that can really help plants to survive many of those types of stresses. And so what you can see here is that, you know, in the fall, especially with the cool season grasses that have high cold acclimation capacity, in response to decreases in temperature and photoperiod, we see that there's increases in freezing tolerance. Okay, so your killing temperature significantly declines. And so you reach the maximal level of cold hardening, you know, sometime in winter months. We know with cool season grasses, we typically reach that around December or January. And then we usually see this, what we would hope to see is kind of a very slow dehardening or deacclimation phase that would occur in the springtime. However, from a turf management perspective, we've tended to focus a lot on kind of the cold acclimation capacity, and from a physiological capacity, we know a lot about the cold hardening and cold acclimation process in grasses. But regardless of what we do in the fall, a lot of times the injury that occurs is dependent on environmental conditions over winter months and into early spring. And so what I'm showing here in this graph is now this phase where you may get these fluctuations in these winter temperatures that may be followed with followed by rainfall events or warming of ice or snowfall to cause a lot of free water in the area. And so here, if this were to happen in the winter, some grasses actually have the capacity to reacclimate, whereas others may completely lose their freezing tolerance, and so we could see injury even soon after cold acclimation. So we can see injury happening in January up through through the spring months. And so what kind of got us started on this research when I first got to UMass was this issue between annual bluegrass, which is shown here as a poa, and creeping bentgrass. We would see these temperature fluctuations. So this was a midwinter thaw, 60-degree weather, followed with a significant amount of rainfall for about 3 days, and then we had below freezing temperatures for about two nights. And this is what happened. This is actually natural grass tennis courts, which are composed of about 80% annual bluegrass that's grown on there. And but the bent grass, they actually had a 100% survival of the bent grass, and you can see all this green is actually bent grass, whereas the poa died. And so what we're trying to understand is whether a lot of this injury that occurs to annual bluegrass is due to some lack of cold acclimation capacity, or does it have to do with the deacclimation? How sensitive are these grasses, are these cool season grasses, to deacclimation? So a lot of our research has centered on trying to understand some of these questions and try to answer that. And again, because there's been quite a bit of research that's been done on cold acclimation of plants and in grasses, we've really kind of turned our research to really understand what happens during that deacclimation phase. And so hopefully, by better understanding the physiology, we'd like to try to understand how to better manipulate deacclimation. So can the turf managers actually come in during some of these events and try to reduce deacclimation potential in grasses, or maybe we can breed grasses that have lower deacclimation sensitivity. So that's kind of the background and justification for why we're doing this. So some of our initial work then, this is some of the work that Lindsay Hoffman started as part of her dissertation research, where we needed to be able to simulate this in controlled environment conditions in order to really do a lot more of the physiological analyses. And so one of our first studies was really to try to quantify what the effects were if we exposed these grasses to different deacclimation temperatures or these conditions, to see what would happen to the growth and survival of the two. And so here, from now on, you'll be seeing that annual bluegrass is abbreviated AB, and creeping bentgrass will be CB. And so I'm just going to walk you through what our typical acclimation treatments are. And we had done previously quite a bit of work on perennial ryegrass and with bentgrass. And so this is kind of a typical cold acclimation regime for us. And we modify this a little bit depending on what grass we're working with. But generally, you'll see that the plants are exposed to sequentially lower temperatures until we reach approximately -2 degrees Celsius. And we hold the plants there for a couple of weeks. That sub-zero acclimation is critical for grasses, and we know that it can increase freezing tolerance. And so then from that point, we kind of consider this -2 degrees as our baseline. So that would be our baseline freezing tolerance. And from there, we expose them to what we would typically or could typically see in response to a midwinter thawing event. So we would expose to 4 degrees, 8 degrees, and 12 degrees. So obviously we have kind of what we would expect to have the maximal effect on deacclimation in these grasses. And we expose them for several days. One of the things that we wanted to be able to understand is what happens. Do we actually see changes as early as one day? How quickly do grasses start to lose their freezing tolerance? So based on this, just because I use that term a lot, and some of you who may not be familiar with winter injury research or freezing tolerance research, how we do this is we actually collect plants and we subject them to these controlled freeze tests. And we go all the way, especially with creeping bentgrass, because of its tolerance to cold, we go all the way down to -30 degrees Celsius. And then we rate percent survival using an approximately 3-week recovery period. And then we develop these curves, so we fit percent survival to the temperature. And that determines our LT50. And so here is kind of a summary graph of several studies that we did with annual bluegrass and creeping bentgrass. And so just to kind of set this up, these are our treatments that are going through. Our -2, again, we consider kind of our baseline freezing tolerance, and we're trying to see whether there is a loss in freezing tolerance, indicating deacclimation, kind of going across the x-axis. And on the y-axis is our LT50. And you can see, again, the lower the LT50, the higher the freezing tolerance. And so what we can see, and we saw this repeatedly in all of our studies, was that annual bluegrass and creeping bentgrass, they actually never achieve the same level of freezing tolerance. Creeping bentgrass, in, again, all of the studies, always achieves better hardening. And so we know that one factor that may kind of influence the survival of these two grasses in field environments is that, well, Poa annua just never achieves the same level of freezing tolerance. Now, when we start to expose the plants to different above-freezing temperatures, and I apologize, I actually didn't mention this before, but the temperatures that you're seeing here and what are most critical are the temperatures that are experienced at the crown. Okay, so these are actually the soil temperatures, that the air temperatures in the growth chamber, but this is what we wait to achieve at the soil height, and we use soil temperature probes to make sure that that's happening. What was surprising to us is that, and I point you to this 4-degree treatment, at 4 degrees Celsius, even for one day, we saw a very significant loss in freezing tolerance of annual bluegrass, which is represented by this bar here. And we also saw somewhat of a loss in freezing tolerance for bentgrass. And so bentgrass is also responsive to deacclimation. We see that. However, the rate of deacclimation is much greater. The potential for deacclimation is much greater, even at these lower temperatures. Now, of course, as we increase our temperatures, you have greater and greater losses of freezing tolerance. And one thing that was interesting is that when annual bluegrass plants reached approximately 8 degrees Celsius for 5 days, or if the temperatures were higher, these plants were actually equivalent in freezing tolerance to plants that had never been cold acclimated. Okay? So if these temperatures get up to these levels, then what would happen if the temperatures drop back down? That's kind of what this is where we ended off with this understanding. And so a different way to look at this also, we kind of pooled across our different durations. But at 4 degrees Celsius, we see that there's approximately a 30% loss in freezing tolerance of annual bluegrass. And there is some, again, so the emphasis here, a lot of people kind of look at some of the data and think that maybe bentgrass does not deacclimate, but in fact it does. It just, we don't see as much of a loss compared to when you get to the very high temperatures. So this was our starting point where we were able to experimentally confirm that that these grasses do vary. First of all, they vary in their freezing tolerance, and so we saw that bentgrass is able to achieve a much greater level of freezing tolerance in response to cold acclimation. And we did see that the increases that plants may experience in the field depends on both what the temperature reaches and also how long the plants are exposed to these kind of thawing cycles. And this affects the deacclimation sensitivity. And then finally, both species exhibit deacclimation, but we did see that at these lower temperatures, the annual bluegrass already experiences almost a 2.5-fold greater loss in freezing tolerance compared to creeping bentgrass. So from that, we didn't really take any physiological measurements at that point. We just wanted to see if we can determine if there were losses in tolerance. And so then we went on, and so part of Lindsay's continuation of her research, and then we also had Shen as part of her master's thesis research, looking at different aspects of carbon and nitrogen metabolism. And because we saw losses in freezing tolerance so early, within one day, we wanted to try to understand what was actually happening. And so in some of the subsequent studies that I'm going to present, there's two additional studies. Not only were we using creeping bentgrass, but we also, in additional work, also used, most of our studies, we used a sensitive annual bluegrass ecotype. But we also decided to include a more tolerant, more freezing tolerant ecotype to see if those responses, even at the ecotype level of annual bluegrass, would be different. So what we decided to do for the sake of just trying to look at this deacclimation from the physiological perspective is we selected one treatment of deacclimation. So after exposing plants to those cold acclimation treatments, we exposed them to 8 degrees. That was our moderate deacclimation phase, and so we knew that this treatment would induce deacclimation in both grasses, but it was still different between annual bluegrass and creeping bentgrass. And so, just as before, we always test the freezing tolerance of the plants going through these phases. We looked at a lot of carbon metabolism traits, including photosynthesis, chlorophyll fluorescence traits, and respiration, and then also things like carbohydrate changes and amino acids, as well as protein. So obviously here, this was not all one study. I'm summarizing a couple of different studies and highlighting kind of the important things that we saw. And so this was kind of eye-opening for us, but this first graph is showing photochemical yield. And so this is just a measure of kind of the early steps of photosynthesis, the plant's ability to absorb light and eventually translate that into, eventually for chloroplasts to drive actual carbon CO2 uptake. And what we saw is that within one day of being exposed to those warmer temperatures, annual bluegrass, which is shown in the red here, had significantly higher photochemical yield. And so this indicated to us that the machinery, the photosynthesis machinery in Poa annua, in annual bluegrass, was ready to go within that one day. And so similarly, we saw that gas exchange photosynthesis rates also, again, continuously throughout the deacclimation phase, annual bluegrass was significantly higher, and creeping bentgrass, the photosynthesis rates were suppressed for longer. Both species actually, as many of you know, if you do any high temperature research, respiration is very sensitive to temperature. We do see a significant increase in respiration for both species, but again, significantly higher, which is indicating these major changes in carbon metabolism. So, am I low on time? No? Okay, I will get through this really quick here. So, one of the cool things that we found when we started looking at these different ecotypes is that creeping bentgrass is actually able to accumulate these special storage carbohydrates called high molecular weight fructans. And we saw that maybe this might be one of the major factors for creeping bentgrass and why it can maintain significantly higher freezing tolerance during deacclimation. So, to summarize that, I just wanted to show you kind of a picture. We saw that there's many different things that happen during deacclimation, decrease in storage carbohydrates and proteins, but the main point is that annual bluegrass upregulates its carbon metabolism to a much greater extent. And I just wanted to show this picture. This is a picture taken at 1 day of deacclimation, and you can see the leaves much more hydrated, green, compared to creeping bentgrass on the right. So this will hopefully help us to kind of understand a little bit better what we can do here to minimize the deacclimation. So I'll just end off with the funding projects. We really thank, there's been a lot of work from the USGA, the OJ Noor Research Foundation, and our New England Regional to help fund the graduate students. And I'll wait for the end for questions.
Great.
Thank you.